For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Wednesdays are always busy because we have John Martin in the next segment. I got a Facebook message from a listener who said that they listen, Jeffrey, at UPS. They've got their headphones in and they're listening.
At the package store?
At
UPS implies to me it's the store, right?
You think so?
Yeah, because if you're a driver, I feel like you'd say I'm a GPS driver.
No. This is very clearly it's at some sorting center.
Yeah, or a distribution center,
Because there's a bunch of us at UPS now. I've turned them on to y'all's podcast. We all wear our ear pods and listen and then argue with each other.
Love it.
So where is that?
That's what sports. That to me implies that you're right. That's probably a distribution center. Like that's the sorting, sorting facility. Yeah.
The guy.
Love that. Love that.
Isn't that great? Like, that's what we want. Exactly right. We're glad to be a part of that community.
We just want to start a dialogue, Jeff.
We just want to start a dialogue. Anyway, this guy is bothered that he's bothered by John.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's the problem is that I have to answer not only for my own show, but I have to.
To be clear, you usually have to answer for everyone.
And he says,
I say something, you have to answer for it. If John says something, you have to answer for it.
He said, appears to me, like we say at work, he's a very emotional young man.
John does ride the waves.
He does ride the waves.
John rides the waves.
I can too a little bit, you know. With the Grizzlies.
He rides the waves with the teams. When it comes to gambling, where I give him credit, he doesn't really ride waves.
That's interesting. He's deeply analytical about gambling. But when it comes to
the Tigers,
honestly, it's particularly Tiger football and basketball. Yeah. You know why?
He just cares so much.
It's true, though. It's why would you trust anything I say about the Bills? No.
Maybe
if, like, you ask me who's going to play, because I know the roster pretty well, like, whatever. But in terms of what's going to happen.
I was going to say, that's not true, because I do ask you, when I know certain guys are hurt, and I have to go pick up somebody in the 11th hour of fantasy football.
But in terms of what's going to happen, whatever, because I overreact, because my heart's too much in it.
Were going to get beat in Seattle.
And
the game was over with in the first quarter.
John's heart is in it, so it pains him when things don't go well. Anyway, I have to answer for John. John's going to have to answer for this when he comes in the next segment. Then we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. He's listed the movies again. He's gone through a lovely roundup accounting of what movies, films will be showing in Memphis this week. But then we got a Grizzlies. They're back in action, Jeffrey. Brooklyn Nets.
Indeed they are tonight.
So we'll talk, I don't want to say must win, but come on, man. Seriously. The Brooklyn Nets.
You got to watch the taste out of last night or Monday night as well.
And yes, it's another bad team. It's a bad team. You're coming off of a bad loss where your coach is, let's be honest, ripping the players.
Yeah.
And
certainly their effort.
And you had a game that could cost you in the standings ultimately. And now you've got Brooklyn coming in. That Brooklyn lost in OT last night. Not only played last night, but lost in OT last night. Come on, man.
And then you got to hop a plane.
Yeah. So they play Milwaukee here, don't they?
Well, what I'm saying is Brooklyn had to play at home. Right, yes. They play Jokic, and then it's
A plane. And then hop a plane to come to Memphis. Yeah. You should kick them while they're down. So we'll talk to him about that. And then Sam Hardiman is going to join us. I'm curious because Sam Hardiman told us that his father would be attending World Series games. His father's a big Yankee fan. And it's nice how happy Sam was for his dad. I mean, it's really lovely.
Absolutely.
How happy Sam was for his dad, that his dad finally got to go to a World Series game. Now, my first thought last night as I watched this unfold was, I hope that's not Sam's dad trying to pry the ball out of Mookie Betts' glove.
Fortunately, we got names, and I did not see Hardiman.
I did not see Hardiman. We do have names. Leave it to the journalists right there in New York to track down the two men, true fans, who tried to
I believe brothers.
Well, is that true?
Did
no,
they have
no,
the same?
No. Austin Capobianco is the one who grabbed the glove with both hands and pulled the ball out. His friend, John Peter, grabbed Betts' non-gloved hand. And
I have a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
If your name is, read the first one. It was
Capobianco.
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 Or Capobianco.
Mm-hmm.
Austin doesn't feel like the first name to go with that last name.
Austin. What do you want? You want Tony Capobianco?
Yeah, very clearly. Tony.
You want Tony Capobianco?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's no question. But, you know, it's a melting pot.
Yeah.
This is one giant melting pot. And so John Peter then grabbed the glove in. The quotes from these dudes, they quote that.
John Peter's got to be an alias.
That's probably true. They found them at a local bar after the
no
game.
No way.
Yes. They say, the Yankees have not commented, they say they are being allowed to return tonight.
Really?
Yes. They say that they are being
I thought that was automatic banning.
Capobianco and Peter were escorted out of Yankee Stadium, but said they were told they would be allowed back for Game 5 on Wednesday. The Yankees did not immediately comment. I think if they were going to be allowed back for Game 5, the fact that they've said this, that they are coming back, there's no way. I don't believe they're going to be allowed in the building.
I just didn't think you could do that. Like, maybe next year.
Maybe next year. And the truth of the matter is, I think a year suspension. He's a season ticket holder. I think a year suspension wouldn't
now,
be.
Now, here's the real question, though. If the Yankees do what was done to them back in 2004 by the Red Sox, like, do these guys become cult heroes?
Oh, I think there's.
Are they going to be like a spiritual.
In New York, I don't think these people are unpopular. Now, you could say they've given us a bad name, all that. So there could be that aspect. But, well, let's if this were happened in Memphis. Would we applaud those people, or would we be?
The problem is, like, what's the basketball equivalent?
No. Imagine a world where we have an ML Major League Baseball team. This is this world.
Well, I mean, again, did we win?
Yes, yeah. They won. Here it says here.
We celebrate them.
Here's what they said. They did not seem contrite. By the way, did not seem contrite.
Well, yeah, they were leaving it out there on the field.
I know when I'm in the wrong, and as soon as I did it, I was like, boys, I'm out of here, Capobianco told ESPN. I patrol that wall, and they know it. I patrol that wall, he said. I patrol that wall. We always joke about the ball in our area, Capobianco said. We're not going out of our way to attack. If it's in our area, we're going to D up. They did attack. Someone defends, someone knocks the ball. We talk about it. We're willing to do this. They've got a strategy.
I kind of like this.
This is much more aggressive than Steve Bartman. Much more aggressive.
Bartman!
He just did the instinct.
Bartman just did what
anyone would do.
Right there.
Just instinct.
The ball, first off, what's he going to do? Let it hit him in the head?
Right. 100%.
Moises Alou is so responsible for all of that.
I was relieved because I know that Sam Hardiman's dad is a passionate Yankee fan, and he's also a Bills fan, so maybe a little crazy, you know, maybe just a little crazy enough. So I did not rule out the possibility. It occurred to me that Mr. Hardiman might have been doing this, but he was not involved. That's the lineup today. We got John Martin. And then we have Chris Harrington, and then we have Sam Hardiman. It's a Daily Memphian extravaganza. today. I urge you to read the Daily Memphian. You want the good news today, Jeffrey?
I do.
Some good news? I don't know if it's good. Is it good news or bad news that we're falling back this. You know, we got a lot of things coming up. You got early voting coming to an end tomorrow.
Yeah, Leah and I are going today, this afternoon.
You're going today?
After work, yeah.
Okay, early voting coming to an end tomorrow. You got Halloween tomorrow.
Yep.
And then is it the end of daylight savings time or is the beginning of daylight? What is it?
It's the end of daylight savings time.
So you're falling back this
Correct.
Weekend. We got a lot of things percolating.
So the only good thing is. The only good thing is you do have the extra hour of sleep, so you get to church. You can sleep in a little bit more if you're going to an earlier service.
I go to 11.
Okay, so.
I go to 11.
So that's now, this could also be. This
you
could
go
be
the, early?
We go at like 9:30.
Good for you, man.
Well, that's not
kids.
Super early.
It's kids anyway. So.
Man, this is going to be back by the new
You're days. Up. You're up. You're up. Yeah, you don't get to sleep in anymore for another 20 years or so.
All right.
There you go. The good news is.
But I believe also on Monday will be a all-time high of car wrecks.
Remember, people adjust, right?
Remember you read the story last year.
Car wrecks.
Correct.
Because.
It's because, like, the timing's off.
Rhythms are off?
Yes. Well, it's, and also, like, the. So it'll be lighter earlier. And it's darker later. And so, like, that throws. But it's also, if you think about it, it's going to be darker. I'm sorry. It's darker earlier, but lighter earlier.
I've seen a lot of car wrecks recently, I'll be honest. I've just been driving around here. Honestly, there's been a lot of car wrecks. Claire, since she moved to Memphis, she had never seen a car wreck happen.
Yeah.
Right? She'd never seen a car wreck.
Now she's double digits.
Now she's up to three. But she never actually witnessed a car wreck.
Claire, I'd still say that's the under.
Anyway, here's the good news, and this is because Fishman wasn't with us today. I feel like I have to give the economic news. Economic news today dropped. Gross domestic product adjusted for inflation expanded at 2.8% annual rate in the third quarter. So consumers are spending, inflation is cooling, and the U.S. economy looks as strong as ever. And this is Joe Brucellis, chief economist at the accounting and consulting firm RSM. The economy right now is firing on nearly all cylinders. It is funny. When I tell people good news, like last week I read the crime was down.
Yeah.
And this week I'm reading just literally the breaking economic news. The economy right now is firing on nearly all cylinders. I don't know. People don't like good news now. People don't like good news now.
More underrated depressing mm-hmm. thing that will happen on Sunday. Jeff can be Mr. Walking on Sunshine. I just like to prepare us.
Yeah.
There's going to be nothing worse than when you're at the 3:25 Sunday game and it gets to halftime and then like you look outside and it's dark. That's always a very depressing moment.
I can see that, too. It is National Candy Corn Day.
Mm,
today is
right.
National Candy Corn Day. I think the debate about candy corn is overdone. It's a debate that...
What debate?
It's
not good.
I like candy corn, mm-hmm. but whatever. It's fine. There we have it. There we have the debate framed in one.
See what we did there?
In one little. I don't love candy corn, but I would 100%. You know what I really like? I like a candy pumpkin.
They're heavy.
I like the fact that, well, they're the same. They're just, it's just a little bigger and it's a little, and rounder, as you might imagine. And so I think candy corn is fine. I'm not passionate about it. I did ask Gabe yesterday, a little bit of a faux pas. Sorry, we have news I have to get to here, but I had a little bit of a faux pas yesterday because I asked Gabe, if you were trick-or-treating and all the world's candy were in a bowl there for you,
yep.
and you got to pull out three pieces, what would you pull out? Now, Gabe said, I'd pull out the Lindt chocolate balls, you know, those little
yep.
thing. And honestly, I that's not the spirit of the question. It's not some Swiss chocolate ball thing. It's like...
Which, to be clear... is delicious, but I'm with you.
It's not the spirit of the question.
It's got to be made in the good old U.S. of A.
They're good. They're fine.
The Lindt chocolate bars go.
The gut bars?
Yeah.
Maybe the bars. I'm talking, you know, those little balls
yeah.
you get. That's fine.
But the actual, like, the, Lindt, yeah, that's like the fine. Rectangular
chocolate
bar. But
we're not talking about Swiss chocolate here. And so I kind of laid into him. I said, Gabe, what are you doing? You're not, what?
You don't have to live there, by the way.
Yeah, I get it. So then he compounded it by saying, his first choice was a Milky Way, and then he went Twix, and then he went Swedish Fish. Now, I can respect the Twix, although it wouldn't be mine, and I can respect I like going off the board for the Swedish fish, but then I kind of laid into him. I said, you picked a boring candy bar. A Milky Way's terrible. What is wrong with you?
I mean, Milky Way's the same thing as a Snickers, just without the peanuts.
You put your finger on it. Because he's allergic to peanuts.
Yeah.
And so, in fact...
Now he turned that on you. Now you felt bad. Uh-huh.
I felt bad.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, asking a... You know, what you're... I like a blind person what their favorite painting is.
Correct.
Right? How could he possibly...
Yeah, more of a Rembrandt guy?
This is a terrible... I wanted to... Yeah. Right now, you... Because the obvious winner is Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, but it's off the board. And you can't go Snickers there because it's got peanuts on it. Like, there's a lot of things that are off the table.
And I'm going to shock you.
What?
I don't have a peanut allergy. I'm not the world's biggest Reese's fan. And one of my to be clear, my favorite ice cream...
Me. You have a lot of
Favorite ice cream is from Baskin-Robbins, peanut butter and chocolate. But there's something... it's the distribution. the ratio's off. It's too much peanut butter.
I will go... Just for the record, then we'll move on. Reese's, then I'll get your three too. I'll go Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Okay.
I'll go Butterfinger. And then I'm going old school with a bit of honey.
All right. My favorite candy bar is $100,000.
$100,000.
I'm with you on Twix.
I like it fine. Don't see it with me. You're with Gabe on Twix. $100,000. Twix.
Oh, I thought you said.
I said I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Butterfinger was my second one. Did I not say that?
I'm going to go back to my childhood. Give me a payday.
A payday.
Yeah.
Twix, payday, and $100,000.
Yeah.
There you go. You can pick your own, ladies and gentlemen. All right. We do have sports to talk about, of course. And two things I wanted to focus on. One was, did you happen to see, Rudy Gay retired.
Yeah. Right?
And did you happen to see Rudy Gay's piece in the Players Tribune?
So I did not. I saw people talking about it. Full disclosure. I didn't know the Players Tribune was still a thing.
Well, the interesting thing about the Players Tribune, of course, for me is like those pieces that, you know, ostensibly written by the players are obviously not written by the players, and they all sound exactly the same.
Yeah.
And they're really good.
Yes.
And they're really good, and they all have the same voice, though. They're not.
I'm with you.
There's no different. They all have the same voice. And so Rudy wrote a piece in the Players Tribune. And I wasn't the biggest Rudy fan. Like, Rudy, to me, in Memphis, was when he was in Memphis, he was the guy who thought he should be Kobe. And it's interesting. He leads with a Kobe story is how he leads this piece. And he wasn't Kobe, but he always wanted to be Kobe. And he wanted to be the star. He thought he should be the star. He came into the world. He was like heading to college. He was the best high school player in the country. He was incredible. And then he kind of had that same reputation at UConn, like a lot of big flashy moments. And so if Rudy had wanted to just fill up the stat sheet, if that had been his goal to be a fill up the stat sheet player, lockdown defender, contributing in all kinds of ways, scoring big buckets, everything, he would have been better served but he wanted to be the star.
Yeah.
And so in the end, the Grizzlies made the decision. They were in a salary cap crunch and they made the decision to move on from Rudy. And that was the correct decision. And then they had great success after that. And the one playoff series, honestly, where because Zebo was hurt, Rudy had to be the leading man. That was when they lost to the Clippers.
Yeah.
So, really nice guy. I liked Rudy, and I gather people thought Rudy was hot as well. It's an interesting. But I found this to be really a very effective piece. After he tells the Kobe story, he says this. He says, "Look, I'd be lying if I said my career turned out exactly how I wanted it to. Let's be real here. It didn't. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that." Well, that's a... And then he goes on about the things that were disappointing about his career.
Sure.
And that's... I find that to be affecting, the fact that he acknowledges that. Like,
yeah.
He wanted... Now, mind you, any guess, any ballpark... He paid 17 years in the NBA. Want to ballpark how much money Rudy Gay made?
17 years. Okay, so the contracts really go up like in 08. I'm going to show me like $115
million. $181 million.
Even, yeah.
So it may not have been quite the career he wanted, but it would be the career that any of the rest of us would have wanted. That's for certain. So there
you go.
I mean,
I would have taken his rookie deal, but yeah.
So I once did a commercial with Rudy. It was called More Steals, and I forgot who else was in it. Tillery was in it. Ron Tillery was in it, and I was in it, and Rudy Gay was in it, and there's another player in it.
Tony, I thought, right?
Oh, it was Tony.
Yeah.
It was Tony.
Yeah.
What an idiot I am. It was Tony. It was Tony before he had played, I think. Tony as heading into the first Tony year. And I was eating a hot dog at a picnic bench, and then I said, more steals or something like that? And then they've cut away, and then they came flash back to me, and the hot dog was missing from my hand. And Rudy, I think, was wiping mustard slightly from the corner of his mouth. I tried to find it this morning, but could not.
We've played it before.
It was called More Steals, and I was skeptical that they would have more steals. And anyway, I, really classy, lovely guy, but he's totally frank about his career. Anyway, he goes on to say just some interesting things. Really credits Damon Stoudamire for a lot. Once I made it to the league, there were a bunch of guys who helped me be a better NBA player, but the biggest influence early on was definitely Damon Stoudamire. From my earliest days in Memphis, I always looked up to Damon, and please don't let him know I'm saying this. I still look up to that guy today. When I first met him, Damon was the most honest person I'd ever been around. If I made a dumb mistake, and believe me, I made a bunch, he'd call me out. Sometimes he'd embarrass me. He didn't hold back, and that did me a ton of good. Going from being a high school All-American, then to UConn, and doing enough there to be able to leave early, I was a little bit arrogant. Damon wasn't having it. Right from day one, it was like, look, you don't know as much as you think you do. You need to watch and learn. Lots of guys probably would have hated it, but I absolutely loved his approach. I needed someone like him back then to straighten me out immediately. That's good stuff. How about this? From there, it was years of learning from some of the best. There were so many players who were kind enough to pass along their expertise, way too many to name. But I'll always be grateful to Mike Miller for showing me how to put in work, how to hone your craft through consistent and focused training. Mike was a maniac with that stuff. And if you were around him enough, you couldn't help but have it rub off. So there you go. Darrell Arthur, too, another Memphis guy, did all the little things, the dirty work. And Kyle Lowry. Kyle is one of my best friends in the entire world, going all the way back to middle school, so it was awesome to be able to suit up and play in the NBA games with Kyle. He mentions other non-Grizzlies along the way, Manu Ginobili, Patty Mills, DeMar DeRozan, etc., particularly DeMar DeRozan. Then there's a whole section on Memphis. And again, you can read this piece over the Daily at the Players Tribune. It's really good. It's also linked in the Early Word, which is the newsletter from the Daily Memphian, which is terrific, which goes out every morning. He says, which brings me full circle to Memphis. I arrived in Memphis when I was 19, and I was so fortunate to be there with Damon and Kyle and Pau and Mike Conley, all of those guys, and be able to see something built from the ground up. It was so fun on the court, but just as importantly and meaningfully, it was awesome being a member of that community. One thing about Memphis, those fans, they love to see players they cheer for out and about town. Like they really want to see you. You can't be one of those hermit crab type dudes, though we never see them anywhere types, and be playing in Memphis. It just won't work. They need you to be out there with them, walking and eating and running errands. And if you can hang in that way, those people will show you more love than you could ever imagine. It may not be for everyone, but I absolutely loved it. All of it. I loved being part of that whole vibe. Unfortunately, trades happen. And look, I'm no dummy. I know the deal. I know I get a lot of flack for the Grizzlies having a run of success after trading me, but all I can tell you is I'm proud of what I contributed toward the rise of that team back then, and I hope everybody there knows how much I loved being a Memphis Grizzly. I enjoyed a bunch of places where I played during my career. Toronto was amazing. Sacramento was a really fun place to play, but there will always be a soft spot in my heart for Memphis.
I found the commercial.
That's cool, though, isn't it? Didn't you think
Absolutely.
That's lovely. And so good for Rudy. You found the commercial. Here's the More Steals commercial.
So, you guys think the defense is going to be a lot better this year?
Definitely. I think we have a lot more steals.
Real? Why do you say that?
Hey, ain't that Jason Williams over there?
And there I am without the hot
no
dog.
No hot dog.
No hot dog.
The hot dog's gone.
It's Tony. And they're making reference to the Jason, distracting me with Jason Williams, because it was Jason
Correct.
Williams who, in the wake of the playoff sweep, went after me in the locker room.
I know Jarvis doesn't have a line in this, but he's just captivating.
What's Jarvis's role in this?
Jarvis is like kind of standing behind. Like, so Jarvis has got the power stance of the one leg up on the bench, like really intently focused in on what the guys have to say.
Uh-huh.
But like, you can't take your eyes
off. And I give him the old,
yeah,
really?
Really?
I've perfected that.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Really?
Yes.
It's a skeptical, really. There's mm-hmm. so much. Like, I pack, you know how some people, what they say, like Terry Garr died. You see that over there? Do you know Terry Garr? You know, are you familiar with her work?
I saw her name today.
They saw her. You didn't know
Did
it
Did not
before?
Know her work.
Well, they say that she was really, she could, her eyes really, you know, she could just in the,
look into
her
your soul.
Eyes. No, she could convey a lot of different texture and emotion. And I think that really conveys the same sort of stuff all packed in there. I think it's, with all due respect, I've worked on that really my whole life.
Yeah.
And
it's really what you're saying is, I don't believe you.
It's carried me a long way. So there you go. That's a hell of a career. I know he said he's disappointed in it. Or it's not the career that he dreamt of, but hell of a
17 years, $180 million,
buddy. Who'd he play for? He played for one, two, three, six teams. Who?
All right.
Grizzlies. I just named some of them. Yeah.
I know. Grizzlies, Spurs, Raptors.
Made the most money from the Spurs. No, Kings, I think. Kings. Oops, I said Kings.
Okay.
Never mind.
Was there a Blazers spot in
no.
there?
No. Kings, Raptors, Grizz, Raptors, Kings, Spurs, Utah, and OKC. That's who he played for. So
I forgot about the OKC.
Rudy Gay. All right. The other thing I wanted to get to, and I'll talk a little bit about this with John Martin as well, is Jeff Traylor, the UTSA coach. Memphis football plays UTSA this weekend. And he was asked about Memphis and had some interesting things to say. Here's that.
There's a reason there's a movie about Moneyball, because it's an anomaly, right? We have a tenth of their recruiting budget for a roster, and that's a tremendous disadvantage. There's a lot of those kids on that roster that we recruited and have good relationships with, and we couldn't get them. And the truth that nobody wants to talk about anymore is, of course, the coach matters. Of course, relationships matter. Facilities matter. The city matters. Winning matters. But at the end of the day, people vote with their pocketbook. And young men aren't much different than old men. That matters in the end. And I don't want to put the exact number out there because, you know, I just don't want to get that specific. But it's six times more than what our roster is.
So there you go. The numbers morphed during the course of the conversation. 10 times more at the beginning, 6 times more later. But so, Jeffrey, a couple things interesting about this. First, just from the UTSA perspective, if this is happening and you're listening to Jeff, and they've had a disappointing year, obviously, last week included, would you dismiss this as the whining of a coach? Shut up and stop whining. Win games? Is that what's happening here?
I mean, it's kind of twofold. One, I don't really love when coaches start whining about NIL because, like, in the end, you're a fundraiser as well. Like, if you're not happy about your NIL situation, go out and raise some more money. Does that mean you can get to the $5 million or whatever Memphis has, 10, you know, I guess it's $5 million, somewhere around there? It's like, no, but it also comes across as you're acting like the only reason you're not winning right now is because they have NIL money and you don't. And by the way, it's not like,
not acting like that is what he's saying.
Correct. And it's also
it's directly what he's saying.
Well, and it's also funny. It's like, Ryan at times has like kind of had the same opinion, and it's like it's funny just like how the
he doesn't say it anymore though.
The levels of it,
right.
You know what I mean? Like
right.
It's, you know, you get Jed Fish when they're playing, you know, Oregon, saying, well, yeah.
Well, that's 100% true. Like if you are if Memphis were to play Ole Miss or something or whatever, you know, there's the spending disparity in your conference. And that's really what's most critical, right? Is because in the end, the truth of the matter is mostly, even in this season that was supposed to be a playoff season for the Memphis Tigers, the expectation was get to the damn conference championship game and win it.
Like, yep.
And so what you really want to be is you want to be at the school that spends the most in your conference. And then, because it's always excusable for you to lose to an SEC team if you're at Memphis. And that was true even before we talked about NIL. It's always been acceptable to lose to an SEC team if you're at Memphis. So it's more directly framed now that we know about the NIL money. So, there's absolutely levels of this. From the Memphis perspective, first of all, would he know the number, by the way? Is there some reason to think he knows the number, that is accurate, that Memphis has either 6 or 10 times, we'll go with the smaller number, that Memphis has 6 times the NIL budget that UTSA has?
So could he get it, like if he had to go to like a balance sheet and like go Price is Right, would he get like exactly? No, but I do think you know roughly, because you're recruiting against these people, you kind of know roughly how much money a school has, but... Yeah, I would bet he'd get close. I mean, here's one thing we definitely know. He knows how much money they have.
He does know how much money they have. And then I actually think, even apart from, yes, he will certainly know if he is recruiting an offensive tackle. Let's say it's an offensive tackle from Texas who actually would prefer to go to UTSA. And that tackle or the tackle's mother or father says, yes, but Memphis is offering me X. Those conversations 100% happen because, listen, if you can get close to it or match it, I'll stay at Texas, right? Whatever. So he certainly knows those numbers. I think he even probably has at least heard, whether it's accurate or not, the big ballpark number because coaches talk.
Well, they all, yeah.
They all talk.
No one, that's always my favorite. It's all about what happens in these walls. There's no bigger group of gossips on the planet than football coaches.
Well, you hear they got a $10 million budget. Yeah.
They hate gossip.
So then from the Memphis perspective, A, this is incredibly reassuring. And then you're like, damn, this is good. We're outspending UTSA by 6 times. Not even, this isn't just marginally, not by a third. This is 6 times bigger than UTSA. That should give you great confidence in Memphis. But the other thing it should do, should make you say, why the hell aren't we winning the conference championships around here? It's both, right? It's like, honestly, and it's what you say about the job. This job, to get to 9 or 10 wins, it's another, why doesn't Memphis football get more credit for being 7-1?
Yes.
It goes to this point. It's because
it's a better job.
They're outspending everybody by 6 times. They should damn well be 7-1.
Correct. The other thing is, I really hate when Moneyball gets used as the example, and I really do blame Michael Lewis for this. It completely blows past the idea that they had like 3 frontline unbelievable starters. Like when you had Zito, Hudson, and Mulder.
He's not putting faith in Moneyball. He's actually, in this context, he was dismissing Moneyball.
Yeah, like
he was dismissing Moneyball. He was saying there's a reason that teams with low budgets that we celebrate the occasional team with a low budget that does well. And you're right. It was, they had 3 incredible starters.
Yes.
So, but anyway, I'm not sure if you're a Memphis fan, I think you have to be happy about that, right? Fundamentally happy about that, but it does put the 7-1 in context. And
yeah,
I think the other thing that makes
it frustrating is, and this is a problem I think that we're going to see throughout the year, unbalanced conference schedules. Like, I know we all, quote-unquote, hated divisions. We hated divisions. It's not fair. It's not fair. It's like, you know, one thing that really does work about divisions is you kind of know the pecking order.
Right. You can figure the damn thing out.
Yes.
Do you watch the, you know, last night they had their last dry run college playoff ranking
I've not watched the preview ones or whatever.
Using the AP Top 25.
Yeah.
And I watched a fair bit of the one yesterday. Anyway, we'll talk to John Martin about all of this when we return. Then Chris Harrington on the Grizzlies, and then Sam Hardiman on all kinds of stuff. Sam did a great deal. He went and he asked Grok, the XAI computer a lot of questions about the election. And what's interesting is the questions, the answers that Grok gave, this is Elon Musk's computer.
Yep.
Were dramatically different than the answers Elon Musk gives or the things that Elon Musk says. It was a genius piece that Sam did, and we'll talk to him about that as well. I was driving down Park yesterday, looked over, I saw the frame corner right there on Park Avenue, and pointed it out to Claire. She said, yeah, I've been meaning to take some stuff there. And she says, because once you get stuff framed, it's forever. And that's true. Once you get something custom framed, it transforms that thing into a memory that you will have forever, whether it's hanging on your wall, whether it's something you pass down to your kids, whether it's sports memorabilia, whether it's wedding photos, whatever it is, you bring it in there and they will beautifully custom frame it. They sell frames, pre-made frames as well, and you could do it yourself. But for something tricky or for something that's really important or for a gift, consider their custom framing. They're great at what they do. It's the Frame Corner, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. When we return, John Martin joins the show at 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by John Martin. Jason and John every single day from 11 to 2. And John, I said earlier in the show that I'm having an answer for you because there's a listener and he works at UPS and he said he's turned his coworkers at UPS onto 92.9 and they listen with their ear pods in and then they argue about what is said. But one of the things they argue about is you, and they've concluded that you are an emotional young man. Are you an emotional young man?
I mean, I'm 33. I mean, I'm a grown man. I don't really think I'm so young anymore. What caused that? I mean, I don't understand. Like, did I actually
honestly, I wasn't going to go into this, but it seems I work at UPS at night, and we all listen to your podcast of your shows. But it seems lately, John Martin has an agenda against Ryan Silverfield and Penny Hardaway. Football team is 7-1. I realize we've played nobody, but I've turned everybody on to work to y'all's podcast. We all say the same thing. Believe he is upset that Silverfield goes on to another station other than his. Appears to me, like we say at work, he's a very emotional young man. You want to know my response to him?
What's that?
You want to know my response to him? This is what I said. Well, you can think
whatever. You threw me under the bus.
I said, I like and respect John. This is I'm reading verbatim. I said, I like and respect John. And if the point is to get fans in the stadium, it's crazy that Ryan doesn't do more media and that he doesn't come on the station that has a massive listenership. Ryan has done a decent job and has the team at 7-1. But the lack of fans, that's a reflection of the lack of momentum the program has generated, which is in part because of Ryan. And I say that as someone who doesn't care if Ryan comes on my show because, honestly, he's not the best interview. You would hope that winning would be enough, but the contrast between Norvell's approach to promoting the program and Ryan's approach is remarkable. That's what I said. What do you think?
Well, I appreciate it.
Say something? Were you going after Ryan yesterday in his 7-1 record?
No, I mean, Jason and I just had a conversation about, you know, what breaks through for Memphis football and what doesn't, you know?
What does? Okay, answer me that then. What does breakthrough for Memphis football? Because right now it feels like, and I know you've said before, you think it's winning, and the Grizzlies have won, and that's why they are, you know, this colossus in the city, and it feels like both Memphis football and basketball have receded. So what breaks through for Memphis football?
Well, winning, okay, so let me say this.
Yep.
Winning college basketball and winning in college football are very different. They're just, they're very, very different. Because, and this is very simple for anybody to understand, Memphis basketball, if they win 30 games, mm-hmm. right, you feel like, damn, they got a chance. They got a chance to 30-4, and you're like, damn, they're going to be a 2-seed. They're going to be a 3-seed, right? Memphis football can go 10-2, which is the likelihood, and they'll be playing in the Walgreens CVS COVID-19 Binance Bowl, right? So that's
Here's the thing. If the entire Memphis basketball season was the conference season, it would be very similar. If Memphis is going to – Memphis basketball, in fact, does compete against – the best teams in the country, and ultimately is, if they're successful, can in the postseason compete with the best teams in the country. And that's not true of Memphis football. Memphis football had one game against Florida State, and then the rest of it's against, you know, this schlock.
But, you know, even if Memphis was 30-4 with a 6-seed, like, you'd still be like, okay, this team is undervalued, like, they just know how to win, like, you just have a shot, and Memphis football does not have a shot right now. Not only do they not have a shot, they don't even have a shot to go to their conference championship game. I mean, extremely.
Well, they do have a shot, but yes, we discussed
extremely remote.
What?
Yes, we can talk about, like.
But what breaks through if they did?
Let
me ask this: what does break through? You tell me this? Would, in fact, going to the conference, being on track to go to the conference championship game, let's say they had the exact same record they did, but Navy had lost some, or Army had lost some, or they have a chance, let's say Army was on the schedule so they could beat Army and then go to the conference championship game. Would that make a difference? I'm not saying that they
would.
I'm not putting them in Boise State's position.
Yes. I would say yes, because you at least could still be the highest ranked, you know, the highest ranked conference champion, right? Whatever. Like, you have a chance. You're live. You have a chance. Right now, they don't have a chance. Right now, they just do not have a chance.
Why has Memphis gone from, and I don't know the exact numbers, but it felt like, and maybe this is wrong, maybe Jeffrey, can you look up average attendance? Why did Memphis go from averaging 32,000 to averaging 24,000 or whatever it is now? And is the answer COVID, or is the answer something else?
You asking me or Jeffrey?
I'm asking you. Jeffrey asked to look up the numbers.
I don't
because
know.
Back
I mean,
then they weren't. Back then they didn't have a chance to win the national championship or anything else. They were.
Yeah.
They would go to the.
I mean, I think momentum is a real thing. I do. I think momentum with, like, just your fan base and, you know, style of play and all these different things. I mean, I think they're real. You know, you're kind of building off of things, and I think Memphis football in the last 4 years that's coincided with Silverfield. Look, people are getting at me if they want. I really, like, I'm used to it. I've been doing this for a long time. It's not the first time. It's not going to be the last. But Ryan Silverfield hasn't won a big conference football game since 2020 when he beat UCF. Like, it's just kind of been what it is. They win the games they're supposed to win in the conference, barely, usually. Lose the games that they're supposed to lose in the conference. Like, there's just no really ever this football team. And I think people are just beyond your core, right? Beyond that 4,000, people are just uninterested in it. I mean, I'm not telling you what to do with your money. I'm not telling you what, you know, I don't blame people though. I mean, I, you know, it's not like, are you looking forward to this game this weekend against UTSA? I mean, who cares?
Jarvis says, Tigers are 25th in the coaches poll. I don't know what else to say. Here's the truth, though, Jarvis. There's a reason. If that was persuasive to people, we're not saying what should be or isn't. We're saying what is persuasive to people. If being a team that was 25th in the coaches poll created momentum, you would have had 30,000 people in the building. It doesn't. It just doesn't. So you can say that people should be interested or more interested or fired up or whatever, but we're actually addressing the question, why aren't they? Because they aren't.
Right, and what will, right? They, you
and
know,
because, so are they because, all wrong?
To me, what I would say is,
yes,
you're 25th in the coaches poll, and you're fourth in the AAC. Like, how is that possible? You know, that's the problem. That's the problem. People hate the league. This is why I was on my soapbox about the Pac-12, and everybody thought I was.
People hate the league. People hate the league.
Everybody thought when I was doing that I was being ridiculous, that the idea that you would go for less is just preposterous. You know, Memphis can't afford to do that. And my whole thing the whole time was, can they afford to do what they're doing now? Can they afford to stay in the sleep? People are totally uninterested. Now, it's also an uninteresting style of play. It is. It is. It's boring. It's boring. It's incredibly frustrating that the best the offense has looked this year, the best it's looked, is when they're losing in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. And it's just like, how do you only turn up the notch and absolutely have no other choice? You know, why can't you give people four quarters of that? Why can't you call some stuff in the first quarter?
Right.
You know? I mean, it does matter. It does matter. You have to put an exciting...
And it's all these things. It's all these things. It's promotion. It's style of play. It's back. Once upon a time, they were building something, right? They'd come from being a horrible program to getting to be a relevant program, and so there was more momentum there, right? It's
right.
It's COVID. It's the league. It's a lot of things, and it's not one thing.
Exactly.
And
okay. You're right. It's not. But it is one thing above all, though. It is one thing above all.
What's that?
And it's that they're not winning their league.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe that's one thing.
I think that's
all.
The biggest thing. Like, I think that's like the league sucks and you can't even win it.
Right.
The same is true for basketball, right? Like, people are totally disenchanted on
right.
the basketball side of that.
Right,
too.
The league sucks. And by the way, your pick's finished second. You haven't won it. You haven't ever won it. Penny's never won it. Literally, with the talent he's had, he's never won it.
So it's not just a football problem. It's
the other thing. And I do believe this is to be true, is that... to the extent that you are emotional about this stuff, it's because you care about this stuff. There's two ways to be a fan, right? There's the, I always believe things are going to turn out well. And honestly,
right.
It's the way Jarvis approaches it, which I appreciate.
Sure.
I celebrate his optimism and wish I could live like that way when it comes to the Bills. And then there's the, look at Jeffrey. And then there's just being frustrated with your team that it doesn't feel like it is maximizing
right.
all of its potential. And then
well,
it's
think about this,
rage
right?
watching.
Like, think, what would you think of Jeffrey, right? And I mean this, like, I'm not comparing, but what would you think of Jeffrey if he walked into the studio every single week and thought, I think the Giants are going to win this
and
week?
There's a difference, though.
Like,
there's a difference, though, in that the Giants are truly floundering. Memphis Tiger football
is not. They are. And Memphis could. And Memphis could win every week. They could. I'm just saying, you know, like, that's how I operate as a fan. You know, like, I just assume my team is always going to lose and underperform, you know, because they usually do. And so I'm rarely ever surprised in that way. It's just easier for me to get through my life, not having shoulder the burden of just one more
okay.
disappointment.
Two more questions, because then I have to let you go, because you got your own show to prepare for and I got Chris to get to. One is, do you feel better, worse, or the same about the Memphis Tiger basketball team having watched the two exhibitions that you did before you watched the exhibitions?
People are probably sick of this.
At least you tell us. Shoot it straight, John.
I'm going to do my best to remove all the emotion. But
yes.
I feel worse. I feel a lot worse, actually. I don't think they're going to win the AAC. I think they're going to have problems, not just on the court, but off the court.
Wow. Why?
All year long.
Why, where's the hint of that? Just because the Tyreek Smith thing? Where's that coming from?
I think that's pretty insidious. And so I think that's going to be something that
do you,
that
do you not
on.
Believe he was injured for, and is that why?
No, I'm not. I mean, Hitman has reported that there were other players, right?
Right.
And so that's going to be a problem all year long, because you have promises that were made by people that are no longer here. And that's going to continue to be a problem throughout the season. And like, they are an absolutely abominable shooting team. And that can't improve. You're either a shooting team or you're a non-shooting team, and they're a non-shooting team. And, I mean, can they win games 70-65? Absolutely. Like, if they just commit to that 100%, I do think they have a chance. But, you know, again, that's such a high, high bar.
Well, there's also then a lot of room for error there. You know, then if you're trying to win five, I mean, and then you end up losing by one, you know, whatever.
And this is another thing. Like let's just put all the cards on the table here, okay? People are like, they're like, PJ had 8 fouls. There's no world where he would have been able to score that many points in a real game because he would have been on the bench, right? So that comeback was totally engineered by him, but he would not have been on the floor because he had 8 fouls in the entirety of the game. So, you know, this is what happens, right? This is what happens when you sort of flip your roster every single year, and you know you're starting over. And yeah, they got here in June, and yeah, you know, but then you got other stuff, and eventually, you know, the magic runs out. And so I'm not optimistic really at all about their non-conference, and I'm just going to have to kind of be shown it to believe it.
And then finally, to go on a more optimistic, we'll let you go on a more optimistic note. I heard you say on your show that if the Grizzlies are healthy, they're elite.
Yeah, special is also the word I used.
And special, you believe that?
Yeah.
Elite and special.
Yeah, and I believe that. I mean, you know, I expect everybody to go tonight. I'm expecting, you know, a 30-point win. That's the Nets. Who cares? But I just, you know, we've seen so little of it. I think people kind of forget that, how little we've seen of Desmond, Jai, and Jaren on the court at the same time. And their record when they're all on the floor together is just, it's incredible. It's as good as any core in the league, really, in terms of that, in terms of win-loss. We just haven't seen it. So when we do see it, you know, and then you add a little bit of playmaking from, you know, Santi and his shot making, and a couple of contributions from Scotty and Jay Huff, and then Gigi and Vince come back. I mean, this thing's in a really good position if they can get serious about the rotations at any point. And that's definitely a thing. But if that happens, I guess I'm gonna have to start qualifying it as if everybody's healthy and if the rotations ever get serious, this team is elite.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Yep.
John Martin from the Daily Memphian. We're late to get to Chris Harrington. We'll do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.